Hey, good evening, everyone. It's Cole Johnson here with Mojo with Kojo. Today's date is February 27th, 2025. It's about 7:21 p.m. I have my good friend here, George Jimenez. He is a Marine Corps veteran that I served with and a brother that I deployed with to Afghanistan. So he has agreed to be on the podcast as a interviewee, if that's even a thing. So, Jimbo, thanks for being here, brother. I appreciate it.
I'm happy.
Again, thank you for your time and thanks for taking time out of your hectic schedule to sit down with me and or sit down with us and tell your story.
Yeah.
I'll go ahead and read your bio.
Okay.
Forgive me. My reading skills are not as good as they once used to be. So again, George Jimenez is someone that I served with in the Marine Corps. So he served in the Marines from September of 2007 to September of 2011. He was an ammo tech. He is the same MOS that I was in the Marine Corps. So we're both 2311s. We both deployed to Afghanistan together in 09 to 2010. He got out as a corporal, which for those who don't know, corporal is an E4. It's a non-commissioned officer in the United States Marine Corps. Jimenez loved his time that he served, but could not be happier with how things have turned out after he got out. He met his wife, Alyssa, and they have been married 12 years now. Things are great. Couldn't ask for a better woman. They have three beautiful kids that he loves to death. Moved out of New Jersey after working in R&D in the chemical industry for almost a decade. Came to Tennessee in February of 22 and went to school for power sports, then automotive after that. Just started working at Ford as a tech. My main passion is motorcycles. I have three and I ride year round, rain or shine. Working on them is my therapy. I know. That is that was your bio. Anything else that you would like to add? Anything that I messed up or that I missed?
Nah, it's pretty cut and dry, man. That's a good gist of what's been going on since we got out, you know?
Yeah. Dude, it's crazy that it's been so long, man, since we got
Know.
out. But yeah. So again, I know I've said this twice already, but I really do appreciate you sitting down and taking the time to do this with me. I
Yeah,
really
you're good.
can't thank you enough. First question, let's go ahead and jump into the questions. How was your childhood, or what was your childhood like?
Childhood was mostly uneventful. I mean, mom, dad, they're still together. dad was he was a cop. Both my parents were in the Navy. They actually met in the Navy, and they were nuclear weapons techs. And then
Oh, that's cool.
dad got out. Yeah, and dad got out, joined Plainfield Police Department in New Jersey. Was there for a pretty long time. Ended up doing the prosecutor's office thing and got all the way up to like deputy chief of the county. So he worked a lot through my childhood. But the time that he did spend at home, he was always like really focused on my brother and I. I only have one brother. He's 3 years younger than I am. And no, he was always there for us and worked himself to death, man, putting food on the table. And we didn't have a lot growing up, but he made sure we had what we needed. And mom stayed home with us for the good first like probably 12 years or something like that. Then once I started getting closer to high school, she started working part-time, then she went full-time once my brother and I were a little older. There was some stuff that was like not, I guess you could say, your average upbringing. My dad got a lot of like threats and stuff from guys either that he locked up or people that he just had issues with in Plainfield, a lot of gangbanger types, stuff like that. And so it was always like we could never go out close to the house. We always had to get like if we went out to dinner, we had to go like an hour away to make sure nobody recognized my dad because like I'd say he got like death threats and we had people like come to our house and like try the door and stuff. Like they would really try and scare the Plainfield cops off the job and he was just never having that. So
Yeah.
it was just something that's a little different. Most kids don't have to go out, with their parents looking over their shoulder just to go to the supermarket. But
Yeah.
no, it was definitely something that was a little unique. But I was kind of a hellraiser, I guess you could say, as a kid, especially in my teenage years. My parents were like, this close to sending me to the military school. And I was like, you know what? Just wait a couple years. I'll join the Marine Corps instead. You'll be all right. But my
Nice.
brother was, he was pretty much the same as me, just a troublemaker. He was just a little, he wasn't so good at getting away with it as I was. But, you know, had some good, really good friends, good close group of friends that I could trust. And, you know, had a lot of really good times. And I tried to, you know, make the best of every situation. I mean, you know me from the Marine Corps, man. I was trying to have a good time wherever I was, and you know, was like that as a kid, and I'm still carrying that through now. You know, at the Ford dealership, the guys are like, you know, another day, and I'm like, yeah, it's a good day, man. I got to ride my bike here, and they're like, how can you be happy? It's 8 in the morning. I'm like, I don't know, man. It's a good day. It's like my family's happy and healthy. Like, I don't know.
It's definitely you know, it's something that you we tend to take for granted for sure. You know what I mean? Like just getting up and you know, being on the other side of 6 feet below, I suppose. Yeah, that's crazy that your dad that you guys had to deal with that. Did anyone ever like successfully like break into your house or anything like that, or
So there was one, it's been a while since I've heard the story, but from what I can remember, like somebody walked up to our apartment door on like the second floor, and the door was unlocked the first time he tried it, but he never actually tried the door handle. He was just like slamming on the door, screaming at my mom, like threatening her and stuff. And I was there with, I think my cousin was there. She's a little bit older than I was, but yeah, he was like screaming and everything, and she was like, you know, pistol pointed at the door, like ready. And
oh.
luckily he never tried the door. He never, you know, tried to get in. And then he came back, unfortunately for him, right after my dad got home the second time. And he got a very, you know, not such a nice welcome when my dad opened the door. May or may not have been armed and directly pointed at his face. But
That's crazy, dude.
yeah,
That's
there's
crazy.
been a couple times, man, you know, guys have, you know, been slamming on the door, stuff like that, trying to get into the house. And it was just, you know, from a young age, we were taught firearm safety. My dad always, you know, he taught us how to shoot. It was just a really big thing. You know, being able to defend ourselves. Martial arts were a big thing, all kinds of self-defense and all. And you know, it was just preparing us for, you know, really the real world, but it was just a step above what most parents are like, you know, I want to make sure you can defend yourself. My dad's like, you really have to be able to defend yourself.
For
It was
sure.
just, it was unique, but you know, it is.
Now, and you said both of your parents served in the Navy?
So they met, I think they met in Colts Neck, and then my dad was stationed in Norfolk, and he only had a motorcycle when they first started seeing each other, and he was riding from Norfolk to Colts Neck, New Jersey, like almost every weekend, just like racking up miles on that bike, man. And
How long did they serve in the Navy? Do you
I
know? Do you
think we
remember?
both did 5 years because that was the minimum for nuke techs. My mom had a really hard time being a woman in the Navy in the 80s. It wasn't so friendly, especially in like the nuke field. So she got like lower clearances than my dad. My dad had top secret, and she was only allowed secret. He was actually in the he was on an aircraft carrier on the, I think it was the JFK, off the shores of Lebanon during the Lebanon conflict. And he was, you know, doing his thing on the ship, and but my mom never got to go, you know, on ship. She was always kept ashore and everything, and she was really good in her field. She was like one of the top people in her unit, but they were just like, eh, you're a woman, like this is a man's job. And I was like, at today's day and age, you know, probably wouldn't be like that, but you know, she has nothing but good things to say about her time served. So, you know, she never let it get her down or anything, and she had a good time and was she's very proud of what she did. So,
And she should be. She definitely should be. It's always crazy to hear or to listen to, you know, people's, you know, stories, especially you know, women that served during that time. Like, you know, now you got women in combat roles. You know what I mean? You know, and but I don't know. I mean, I guess, you know, women have been what, flying helicopters and planes and pilots and doing all that for years. Like combat missions and all kinds of, you know, stuff. So it's just crazy that, you know, people treat people or did treat people like that. Not that I'm saying that that still doesn't happen today. Obviously, it still does to a certain extent. At least I believe it does. That's awesome, man, that they both served. I didn't know that. I didn't know that. And what about your brother? Did your brother serve?
Yeah, he actually joined the Marine Corps right out of high school like I did. So he joined 3 years after. He was actually air wing. He was mainly on Harriers. But he went, he did a, I think it was with like the 24th MEU or 26th. I know it wasn't the 22nd. I think it was 24th to 26th MEU. He went on like the Iwo Jima and stuff, and he was kind of bounced around because he was really good at his job. And he, like I said, he started in Harrier Ordnance, but he's done a whole bunch of stuff, man. He was all over the place.
So was he an ammo tech too?
No,
Or
he
no?
was Harrier Ordnance, so air wing ordnance.
Oh, okay, I
So
gotcha,
kind of,
gotcha, gotcha.
pretty similar to what we did just for airplanes. And
Yeah.
apparently his is way more physical. He can have that because I was good with what we were doing, man.
I don't know, man. I thought some of that shit that we were humping,
There's,
moving those.
you remember the 45 boxes?
Yeah.
Those
Yeah. Yeah.
lots of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome, man. That's awesome. I'm happy. Yeah. Again, I can't thank you enough for doing this for me, man.
Yeah, dude. I'm happy.
You're like a celebrity to me. I'm like all giddy and shit because you're on here with
Always
me,
feels
so.
awesome, man, to like get in touch with people, like especially guys I was deployed with, like you and Farnsworth and everybody is just, no, it's always a good feeling, man.
Yeah, that's good, dude. I'm happy. I don't know if I've ever told you this, but if you ever need anything, I'm only ever a phone call away, so.
Appreciate it, man.
Of course. So I guess the biggest question is, why did you join the military?
Well, there's a couple reasons. Initially, when I was a lot younger, I was really banking on that I was going to fly F-18s off of an aircraft carrier in the Navy. That was like my huge thing. I was like, man, I can't wait to do it. And now I read all these books, and it was weird how like different my brother and I when we were younger. Like he was always reading, like fiction novels and funny things and all that. And like I would go to the store with my mom, and she's like, "All right, you guys can pick out whatever you want." I'm like, "Okay, I want this." And it was like an 21st century aircraft encyclopedia. She was like, "Are you sure you want this?" I'm like
Yeah.
10 years old. I'm like, "Yeah." And I read through the whole thing front and back, man. And that, like, I read this book about I think it was a Desert Storm pilot, and he was talking about like getting into dogfights with MiGs and all this stuff. And I was like, that is where I'm gonna be, man. And so I ended up hurting myself when I was a kid. I fell off of a deck and like pulled something in my back, and they were like, "You have a pre-existing back injury. Like you're never gonna fly." So I was like, "Ah, well, that's out." And I'd have to go through officer candidate school for or whatever the Navy calls it and all that. And
Yeah.
I was like, "All right." So I went home and I talked to my parents about it, and they were like, "All right, do you still want to join something?" And I was like, "Yeah, for sure. I just don't know, exactly what I want to do now." And they were like, "Okay, Navy or Marines?" And I was like, "I mean, there's four of them to choose, if you count the Coast Guard."
Yeah.
Like, "Yeah, I can do the Army or Air Force." And my dad's like, "Great, so Navy or Marines?" And I was like, "Well, I guess I'll go to the Marine Corps, find something cool to do there." And talked to the recruiter, and I was like, I've always been like adrenaline, high risk, and action, go, 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 everything." And I was like, "What would be really cool to do in the military?" And I was like, "EOD. That would be sick." And so my first recruiter actually got relieved of duty. He was like helping kids cheat on the ASVAB somehow or something.
Oh,
And I was
nice.
like, that's not a great first impression, but
Yeah, for real.
so I got another recruiter, Staff Sergeant DeVera, I think was his name. It was a pretty cool dude. He was actually in the Filipino Marine Corps before he joined the US Marines, and he was EOD in the Philippines. And then he came here and he was like, "I got everything except the nuclear, and I failed the nuclear." He's like, "My English is not perfect." So he had a really hard time understanding a lot of the stuff in the nuclear section. Or so he said. I don't know, maybe he just couldn't do it, but he was like, "Ammo tech is a great step to EOD." And from being in it, a lot of ammo techs do really well transferring from 2311 over to EOD. So that was my goal, or my path that I had in my head when I joined. And so yeah, I mean I've just always wanted to do it since I was a kid. And I was like, I'm gonna find the best way for me possible, no matter what it is. Like, it's just something, I had pride from, my parents serving, and I was always, really proud of them and appreciative of what they did. And I was like, it's just something that I've always wanted to do. So did it. Happy I did it, and definitely wouldn't change a thing, man.
Nice. And so we deployed together. Do you want to talk a little bit about deployment, like what it was like to be deployed and like your thoughts on the deployment?
So, I mean, I didn't know what to expect. When we first got out there from what was that SIWO's name? He like miraculously at the last second he couldn't go with us. I can never remember that guy's name, man.
I think I know who you're talking about, but I don't want to name drop, so I don't I'm pretty sure I know who you're talking about, but I know the one that went with us wound up getting sent home because of something that happened
He had like
to
a
its family.
When he was like for the first warrant officer we're gonna go there with, he was like, life expectancy is 27 days, gents, and you'd be counting bullets with you're counting rounds with bullets flying over your head. And I'm like, shit, man, like are you see like cool. I was like, we know our ammo techs, right? Like, oh, are we gonna be like resupplying in the lot on the front line in the Pacific or something, And but when we got there, I know you remember it was freezing cold, and I was like, I'm pretty sure that we were supposed to go to the desert. I don't think we landed in the right place. And it was pretty cool, like getting to see that part of the world. Like I never traveled as a kid. Like our only vacations were to like one lake, and we rented same area every year, and family met us and stuff, but we didn't have money for like extravagant vacations and never got to see Disney World or anything. So I literally never left the country, and I didn't even travel the US all that much. So to get over there and stop at the places that we did, Germany and Ireland, Kyrgyzstan, and I think we touched down in Romania for a minute or two, and but getting over there, just seeing the sandbox, man, like it was eye-opening. I was like, dude, when they say it's desolate, like they are not joking. You look out, like, out of the wire, and you're just like, it's just sand.
Just sand for days, miles.
How anybody could survive there is beyond me. And I actually had a like this long discussion with an Uber driver. My wife and I had Uber back from Nashville, and the guy, I don't know how they got on the topic, but he let me out of the car to use the restroom because I really had to pee. And when I got back in, he was like, oh, so you were in Afghanistan? And I looked at my wife like, what did you say to this guy?
Did you tell that from my dick?
Yeah, like what the fuck? So he's like, oh, I'm from Afghanistan. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. He's like, oh, so he's like, what did you do there? I was like, well, I was in the military. I don't know what to say to this guy because I'm gonna take like what I said.
Were you in at Leatherneck when we were there, or
So he was just like, oh, what do you think of the US's role in Afghanistan and what they did and everything? And I'm like, I'm gonna partially tell the truth, and then I'm also gonna say what I think this guy wants to hear. But I was like, yeah, man, I don't really think we had too many, too much business being over there. I understand, what the I don't agree with what, how the Taliban run things, even what they're doing now, like to especially to women and stuff, is just, it's painful to see. But I was like, I don't want to, curse this dude's country out. And then he's like, you piece of shit, I love my home country. So, just stuff like that. I was thinking while I was over there, just like, how do these people honestly feel about like our day to day, like just being there operating, blowing towns half to hell and everything. And it was just like, I tried to keep that sense of pride, like, I did this for a reason. I joined for at the time, were my good intentions, at least, or I thought they were. And, like I've always had like an innate feeling of protection for people. I've had like weird instances in the past where like some random woman came up to my mom and I one day and she's like, "Your son's an angel." And I was like, "Mom?" She's like, "No, you don't understand. He was sent from God to protect people." And I'm like, "Okay." And I was like, I don't know, 5 or 6 or something. Like I was super young and I'm like, I ain't protecting nothing. Like, but I don't know, that feeling like I should always be a protector is kind of like carried through my entire life. And, you know, that was part of the, like a big thing, say protecting freedom and everything for, you know, protecting people back home and all that. And, you know, just, I don't know, when we were over there, I was like, it doesn't really like feel like I'm protecting a whole lot of people. It feels like we're trespassing a bit. That was the feeling that I had there. It was just like an awkward, like, I don't know, like whenever we were talking to people at the chow halls or, you know, going around like the bazaars and everything, it was just like, I never, like, they're friendly, you know, enough, but it's like, are you friendly because I'm holding a rifle, or you're friendly because you're grateful that we're here, or is it both? You know, it was just like a really awkward feeling when you talk to like, you know, the civilian population there. I'm like, I don't really know how to feel, you know, because I want to feel good about what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, I don't know how they feel about it, you know?
Yeah. I think for me, it was like trust. Like you couldn't figure out if you could trust them or not.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You know, you don't like, know what they're thinking about you. So
you always had to keep them at like arm's distance, you know? And I'm not like they're not people and shit that, but like do you remember there was like that big to do on Leatherneck with the Marine that almost got his eyes gouged out by one of the TCNs?
Right? Yeah.
I don't know I know he was walking back from the chow hall and one of the TCNs attacked him, and the only reason why he didn't get his like actually gouge his eyeballs out was because he had those fucking BCGs on and he had the brain strap on. So the TCN couldn't get his right over it, man. Yeah. So, but it's shit like that, that you know, like you can't really, I don't know. Like I definitely understand how, like where you're coming from and how you feel. I think for me, it was more of like I said, trust.
Yeah.
You know, like a trust issue.
It makes you nervous, like when you're walking around people, especially after hearing shit like that. Like this dude almost got, you know, his eye taken out, you know, by TCN. Is just like, did we vet these people?
Right.
Like the workers that are here. And that was like, you know, I mean, you know, the feeling like always, even when you were in a safe place, you know, like being on Leatherneck or on Bastion 1 and 2 or down at Dwyer, it was, I don't know, man. It was like always looking over your shoulder and that kind of stuff. And, you know, it's funny because I talked to like some guys, especially, you know, guys that I've worked with in the past or, you know, just met through, you know, mutual friends, stuff like that. And I talked to like combat vets who like were doing some hardcore shit, you know, like
kicking in doors and all that shit. Yeah.
With 311 guys and all that. And, you know, they're always like, "Oh yeah, man, you know, it was a good time and you know, whatever." And I'm like, you didn't have that like paranoia feeling, or maybe you're just doing the macho thing and, you know, not, you know, talking about that. You just want to make sure, you know, everybody knows how big and bad you are. I don't know. But, I get so many questions from so many people all the time. You know, as soon as they find out, "Oh, you're in the military?" I'm like, "Oh yeah, you know, I was in the Marines." "Oh man, did you deploy?" Yeah. "Oh, where'd you go?" "Afghanistan." "Oh man, was it crazy? Did you kill people and all that?" I'm just like, "Nah, man, I didn't choose a job where I had to be kicking in doors and you know, mowing people down. I was more like, I had a path in mind, and that's, you know, why I chose the job I did and all that." But I don't know, man. I'm proud of what I did. You know, I'm glad that I did it, you know, but there's always like, I don't know, I guess there's so many gray areas after so long that like trying to remember the exact mentality or the exact mental state I was in at the time, because I've done so much to try and, I guess, you know, change who I am or, you know, how I act, how I behave, and just working on myself day in and day out, you know, it makes it harder to remember. Like the more I strive to be who I want to be, it makes it harder to remember who I was so long ago. But, but you know, you always have the memories and you know, the experience will always stick with me. You know, there's no changing that. It's just it's different to see like how things have changed day to day from like that mental state I was in, you know, while we were over there versus where I'm at now. I'm like, I don't know that I could do that again. It's high risk, and I have a lot more to lose nowadays. So it's just, you know, back then I was like, woo, here we go, deploy, hell yeah. And now I'd be like, ah, you know, I don't even want to ride through the bad part of town. So it's so much different, man.
Well, now you have kids and a wife. You know what I mean? You know?
You know, I have people to protect, I have people to provide for and care for. Like
Right.
it's touched such a game changer, man.
Yeah. Do you remember that, excuse me. Do you remember us going to CAX to Mojave Viper?
Yeah, I still got pictures from that.
Do you remember? Because I think you and I were on guard duty at the same. We were partners, right? Like battle buddies or whatever the hell you want to call it. Do you remember that? I don't know if it was the first night that we had to pull guard duty or what. How many days it was into that, going out to that little FOB or whatever out in the middle of fucking nowhere in 29 Palms. But do you remember us getting off guard duty one night? And that, you know, the coyotes were, so coyotes are the people for the listening audience and the viewing audience. The coyotes are, I don't, when I say coyotes, I don't mean animals. I mean, yeah, I mean people. They're kind of like, advisors, I guess is what you'd call them. Kind of, sort of, right? And they walk around in the area that you're in, and they have like, and the only reason why you can tell the difference, because I think they wore like a bright neon orange vest, right?
Yeah, they stood out pretty well. They weren't like trying to hide or anything.
And I think we were coming back off duty, off guard duty, and that fucking dude, that coyote, threw one of those simulator mortar rounds. And we had just gotten off duty, and I had just taken off my fucking flak and Kevlar, and you know they you got to run and you know get into cover and all that shit. And I threw that fucking Kevlar or the flak over my head, and I didn't even strap it up. I was just moseying, and that damn staff sergeant walked up to me and was like, "What's going on, Lance Corporal Johnson?" And I was like, "I just got off duty,
We're not
Staff
naming.
Sergeant."
Cannot remember his name though. I'm terrible.
I don't want to say his name. He wasn't with us. He wasn't with
No, I
ammo. He
remember.
was with
Wait, maintenance
shit.
battalion or
Yep, he was with Maintenance Battalion. He was a hard charging devil dog. Let's just put it that way.
He told me to
And
call sand and told me to engage all targets downrange. I was like, you're talking about picking up trash, right? Like we're still on that subject, because am I about to go grab a rifle and some rounds or something? Like that dude was like hands down.
let me take what's that damn thing that you put in the butt of your gun? What's or not butt, but the barrel?
They call it a baffle or a that red thing, right? And you like screw it in.
Yeah, it's so that if you had a round in your gun, it wouldn't do anything. But anyway, and he pulled me aside and he like reamed my ass because I wasn't moving fast enough. And I think old Speed Nasty got into him and was like, "Look, don't fuck with my Marines." And he never said anything to. I mean, we never saw him again after we deployed that. I never saw him again
No.
when we got to Afghanistan. But like, damn, dude, calm down.
Like, you know, this is where we're here to like train and learn, right? Like, that's and
Yeah, like I'm going. Shit. Cut me some slack, brother. Fuck.
Do you remember the BEQ manager we had for a little while?
No.
He was staff sergeant that I think he got like busted down from gunny, and they put him as BEQ manager for like a I don't know if it was a punishment or pretty much, but that dude, he reminded me a lot of him.
Was he with us or was he with Maintenance Battalion?
No, he was from supply company, I think. But he was the same way. Like way overboard, and I'm fairly certain he was never like a DI, but he was sure as hell seemed like he wanted to be one. And I was like, that's like the same exact kind of guy as the guy from Maintenance Battalion. Like,
yeah,
it was that mentality, you know?
Yeah. I've told that story a couple times and people are like, really? And I'm like, yeah, dude, like yeah. That, I mean, that's just how it is. You know, that's the Marine Corps.
Yeah.
Like that's the vibe, mm-hmm. You know? And, remember we would get on the radios and we were like,
oh yeah, and then we hear Gunny come over.
Nah. Post two, this is post one.
Oh man,
knock it off, Johnson.
Yeah, and then it got really out of hand. Then there's like 15 people. Oh,
yeah. I remember Gunny. He pulled me aside. And he was like, "Stop doing that." And I was
yeah,
like, Roger that, Gunny.
He yelled at me when we were in Afghanistan. We were loading, remember where like the, issues lot was like, it was like over to the side.
Yep. Towards the back of the FASP.
Yeah. And we had like a ton of trucks. There was like, long bed, 7 tons, LVSs with trailers, like tandem LVSs and everything. And
yep.
He was like, they're getting, I think it was on like the Marja buildup, when we were loading all those guys up. And, Gunny sees me in the forklift and he's like, hey, you need to go down there. I forget who was running the lifts. but it was like between me and Jesse, who were like the fastest two on a lift. And he was like, you got to get down there and you have to start loading. He's like, they need help. I'm like, all right, cool. So I guess he didn't mean like go as fast as humanly possible, but I knew like kind of a trick, or at least I thought it was a trick to go faster on the, remember the little Terex 5Ks?
Mm-hmm.
So you're supposed to drive with the forks down, tilted back, boom in and all that.
Right.
I raised it all the way and then tilted the forks forward so they wouldn't clank on the cage as much.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the pedal to the floor, man. Those things would do about like 24 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
I'm flying through the FASP, right? And this thing's just bouncing like crazy. And I hear Gunny over the radio and he's like, slow it down, Jimenez. And I was like,
I remember that shit. I remember him coming across the radio.
Before I could even slow down, I just watched the entire fork carriage fly off the front of the forklift. And there's just like hydraulic fluid spewing everywhere. And I'm like, now he's really going to be pissed.
So I remember that.
I called him like, hey, Gunny, got to come up and get another forklift. And he's like, why? I was like, well, this one kind of came apart. he's like, what did you do here? Man, he freaked out on that. Was like probably the only time he really chewed my ass.
Yeah.
Was when I dropped that fork carriage off, like going full speed. I ran that thing over, man, everything. Like it was really bad.
Yeah.
I took it to the IMS lot and they were freaking out. They were like, you know, how much is this to repair? But I'm like, I don't know, man. We got a bunch of other ones.
And not to mention all the gear that we got was all inherited and it was all fucking should have been fucking blown up 10 years ago.
Yeah, it's everybody's leftovers. Like, that's
you
remember the army like, went into the cans next door when we were in those little metal buildings when we were like stoked because they had AC above the doors and everything?
Yeah. Yep.
You know, beat the 20 man tents and that insane 150 man tent that we were in for a while. And
when we first got there. Yep.
Yeah. And we had no Wi-Fi, we had no nothing. And you know, we got AC and I was like, holy shit, we're living large now. And, I mean, I'm sure you were as happy as I was to get some air conditioning. And then
the
army moves into the cans next door. They had an entire deck, like a whole wood patio built.
Oh,
workout equipment, Wi-Fi, like satellite TV, everything. And we're like, hell yeah. One person got the Wi-Fi password and then they locked that shit down. And they
got
everything from us.
we would go over there. Me, I think it was me, McKenna, and maybe Fairbanks. Yeah. We would go over there and just sit with them for hours. Like when we got off, you know.
Like nice wooden benches.
Yeah.
It's an outdoor gym. I was like, we're filling ammo cans and taking old like metal bars and duct taping them to do some lifting, man. And like, You guys have an entire gym built like in a weekend.
Yeah. I tell you what, I said this the other day. I interviewed Corey.
Yeah.
Phillips. And I was telling him he wanted to be EOD too.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought that was cool. But I was telling him, I was like, yeah, man, I was like, the group of guys that we went with, like that core group, Gunny, like he is really somebody that I looked up, like I look up to. Like I'm trying to get him on the podcast if I can get in contact with him, see if he wants to be a part of it.
I tried to look him, but I mean, I don't have Facebook, so I like jumped on my wife's and I'm like, I don't remember his first name. So I'm like trying like all different things. And I'm like, dude, I can't find this guy anywhere. Like, I'd love to reach out and be like, dude, like, thank you for being so cool.
Yeah.
Like, you could have been like all the other like hyper motard dudes that just were looking to ruin somebody's day. This dude was just like, let's get the job done, go home and have some beers. Like that was his thing.
Yeah. I don't want to say his name, but the staff sergeant that deployed with us, the one that just came out of the drill field.
Oh yeah.
He was the shit.
He was awesome, dude.
I'm trying to get him on here too. So I'm hoping that he agrees. Cause
I'd be looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah. Him and I'm telling you what, dude, him and Gunny were like, they really, and you know, like you guys too, like the, you know, us Lance corporals and all that shit. And like you know, the corporals that we went to, even, you know, the other sergeant that we deployed with, again, I don't want to say his name, but, like that, I couldn't think of a better group of men, you know, to Marines to go to, you know, probably the shittiest part of the world. Yeah. You know what I mean?
We even lucked out with the service, man. Like a lot of those guys were super cool. Like, and they had already deployed to Iraq. So like they knew more about deployment than we even did being active duty. And it was just, I don't know. The whole thing was kind of effortless, man. Like it was not, people are always like, oh, you know, was it horrible and this? And I'm like, not really. Like, I remember the closest call I had was when McKenna and I were on, duty tech?
Yep.
So
I volunteered to do that the first 3 months. It was me, I don't want to say his name, but it was me and, but yeah, I did that the first 3 months, I think, that we got there.
And I had to do it because Gunny wanted me on the lift, you know, loading trucks at night and stuff.
Yeah.
So I did it for, I think it was like 3 months or something for through like the whole build up to, was Operation Mashtarak, the Marja invasion and everything.
Yep.
and then during it and then, you know, do afterwards. And I was like, dude, it was 20 hours on duty and then you had 4 hours off and it was like 8 to noon, like 8 in the morning to 12 noon. And it was like, what, a half hour ride back to where we were staying in Leatherneck. So it was like, by the time you got there, you had like 3 hours to either shower.
Right.
Or sleep. Or sleep or eat.
Right. Right.
One. And that's all you're getting, you know?
Right.
McKenna and I were on it together during that whole thing. And you remember, was it Nelson, right?
He went with us?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't remember him. I remember him, but I don't remember him going with us.
The reason I remember that guy is because of how
old,
cranky and old he was.
And old he was, yeah.
Late 20s. Like, to us, I was like, you are like a grandfather, man.
Remember we used to call him the old man of the Marine Corps?
Yeah. And I'm like,
grand old man.
So McKenna and I were the worst two to be on duty tech for that guy.
Yeah.
good friends. And I was just like, we were goofing off all night long. Melson's like, trying to sleep. And I'm like, like, we got plenty of time to sleep, man. Like, go. But yeah, McKenna and I were one night, we wake up and I start hearing like boom, 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 like in the distance. I'm like, how's that? Like starts, you know, getting a little louder. And all of a sudden it was like one shot just rocked that. Remember it was like when you walked into the topside tent and you went all the way to the right. That was where like the duty tech cots were, like those little ramps. Yep. And the side of the tent smacked the cots. And I was like, all right, now I'm up. Like, I'm definitely awake now. And McKenna's like, dude, what the fuck was that? And I'm like, dude, I have no idea. So if you ask, I think our, who was out there? You remember the gunny that came out later on in our deployment? I wasn't really too fond of him, but he came in the next day and he's like, you guys okay? And we're like, yeah, you know, we're fine. So what ended up happening was we were getting IDF from God knows where, and it was like the middle of the night, and one hit so damn close that it like blew the walls of the tent in and smacked our racks and woke me and McKenna up. And I was like, dude, I'm pretty sure we're getting shelled. And he's like, yeah, I'm pretty sure. So we did what we were trained to do, and we went outside in PT gear and flip-flops with our rifles, and we stood on that berm behind the little topside tent, and we were just watching rounds impact between, like, us, and I forget if it was Bastion 1 or 2 that was, like, you could see, like, all the way across that kind of barren wastelandish, and we're just, like, watching these rounds come down, and I'm like, that's really close, dude. Super close. And yeah, we just stood there. McKenna's got his little digital camera out, and he's just panning around recording it. And I'm like, yeah, we put one in the chamber, and we're like, I highly doubt anybody's gonna like walk up and get within, you know, shooting distance, but like that was like the closest thing was you know, getting hit that close where like our tent was like boom, and I was like,
yeah,
all right, that was close. But
yeah,
you know, other than that, like we really had a pretty chill deployment. Like, I mean, at least I did. Like, I was, you know, mostly busy on the lift. I mean, I did some pallet riding here and there, but it wasn't like, you know, we're kicking indoors and you know, getting into gunfights and stuff. It was just like, and I think that's the thing that people see, like they watch YouTube videos of like, you know, OEF and OIF, and they're like, it's just rockets and machine gun fire. And like,
yeah,
you know, that's the stuff that was put up for people to see. And I'm like, yeah, but there's a lot that goes on that is not that. And
right,
you know, there are so many MOSs, you know, in the Marine Corps. And I don't know. People have that like preconception that every single Marine is instantly a grunt, like you are all, you know, infantry.
Well,
and I'm like, no, we were kind of hanging.
I think that, oh man, excuse me. I think a lot of people have misconceptions about it, because I think when they think military in general, they think combat.
Yeah.
And it's not. So I'll tell you this. I am a firm believer that any person that's 18, when you turn 18, you should have to join either like AmeriCorps or the military or something, something that is going to teach you like common values, like, you know, that it's not all about you, that it's about something. It's about something greater than yourself. So I'm a firm believer of that. It'll never happen in America. I doubt it. But maybe it will. I don't know. But I had a conversation with one of my coworkers many, many, many years ago, and it's always stuck out to me. And I was like, she basically was asking me, like, you know, like why I joined or whatever. And, you know, I told her, and I was like, I honestly think that everybody should have to join. Yeah. You'd serve 2 years. And she was like, yeah, but not everybody, you know, wants to fight or go to combat. And I was like, see, that's
could be a referred to where airman. Like,
right. I'm like, that's where you're wrong. Like you don't, just because you join the military doesn't mean you're going to go to combat. I mean,
and you could be in a election. Like,
right. I'm like that. Not every, what? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, it was just like, you could be an electrician, refrigerator repairman. You could be like a computer guy. I mean, you could literally do anything other than combat if you want to.
Right. Right. And, but people don't know that, you know what I'm saying? People that have never served or, never had anyone that served. And I'm not saying that they're wrong, you know what I mean? But like, I don't think there's anything wrong with kids believe, figuring out that it's not all about them. You
Right.
know what I mean?
And
It's
that's,
not.
that's a big personal thing for me is like, so in the past, what, 3 years ish, I've been in school and most of the people that I've been in class with have been in like the 18 to 20-year old range. And excuse me. It's like almost disheartening how like, I don't know, it's a combination of like selfish and sheltered and just almost out of touch with reality. And I'm like, it's not their fault to an extent, but like you can also, if you're 18, you're old enough to choose a lot of things. Like you can go out and do anything you can, except for drink. But it's like, you realize that not like the real world is not high school and what mommy and daddy told you and all this. And I'm like, I get it. A lot of kids have really rough upbringings and, some kids are, without parents, some kids are without any kind of role model. And I'm like, I feel for that, cause a lot of my close friends have been without that kind of stability or that kind of strength in their life. And I'm like, but at the same time, if you were forced out of your comfort zone and put into a situation where you either had to get with the program or, well, I mean, you know what happens when you're, bag of shit in the Marine Corps, but I'm like, a lot of these kids could really benefit from that. And it's not going to fix everything. I'm not, it's not saying like it's the cure all by any stretch, but yeah, I'm with you, man. I'm like, there's almost no reason for them to care about anything other than themselves nowadays. I think, especially in the United States, we have it so cushy. People, I don't know. I don't like to get in like political stuff, but it's like there's too many people nowadays where it's like, oh my God, my life is just awful. And I'm like, it's really not. Like if you have running water, electricity, and a roof over your head, you have it better than so many other people in the world. And it's like, that was another eye-opening thing to see, like in Afghanistan, the way people were living, and it doesn't make them any less human. It just like it is just a really tough place to live. Those are seriously tough people. And you cherry pick, you pick 100 people, or and you grab one of them. Chances are they are not going to have what it takes to survive in a place like that. They couldn't even
Agreed.
handle it mentally, let alone the physical strain in a place like that puts on your body. And it's like, I don't know, you should be at least once in your life in a situation where you have to put something before yourself. And
Agreed.
if we did that, I don't know, maybe people be a little more polite, a little more in tune with, their fellow man next to them and more willing, courteous, more helpful. And I don't know, it seems like a pipe dream where it's like, God, we'll never get there. And I hope that we do. But it was just, and I was an asshole as a kid, man. I was not a good kid. I didn't treat people badly. I just did a lot of really reckless stuff and, just did things that most sane people would never consider doing in their childhood. And for, we'll say legal reasons, I shall not go into detail, but, it's just like, if I can go from like an absolute hoodlum to like where I am now, or even what I was, or how I was immediately after getting out of the military, like, I don't know. I think it could benefit a lot more people than it would hurt. And it would help that if you had a complaint and you had like something to, moan and bitch about, it's like, get over it. Be in a situation in your life where you have to get over it. Because I don't know. I don't agree with like safe spaces and like these things where it's like, where everybody needs to live on a little pillow or a cloud of happiness. It's like the real world is tough, man. You're gonna have to work unless you are a genius that invents something incredibly successful the 99% of us, we're having to work hard. We're having to pull our britches up and get to work, man. Like that is just, I don't know. It's hard to drill that into perfect strangers' heads, let alone, you know, raising kids and, you know, seeing who they interact with and who they're around and everything. And, you know, balance, it's like balancing that like control versus letting them discover who they are, where, you know, and I'm always, I've heard it like a kind of analogy where it's like, you can either be a shepherd or an engineer, like the engineer, as far as like a parenting style. And, you know, there's so much more than that, but it was an interesting one that I heard somebody explain. And it was like the shepherd, protects the flock, you know, AKA your family, guides them, and it chooses the fields in which they graze, but it does not force them to do a lot. It just more or less like guiding them along, showing them the right thing, leading by example, putting them in good situations where they can succeed and they can thrive, versus the engineer where it's like, you will do this, you will go here, you will, you know, take this, you will do that. And it's just like, I've always been in the shepherd mentality of like, if my kids aren't successful, it's because I didn't give them the tools to succeed, you know?
Right.
And that's, you know, that's up to a certain point, of course, but, my kids are driven, you know, they have ambitions, they have good ideas, they have so much that goes through their little heads all the time. My daughter's 11 and she's already like, I think I want my first job to be at Chick-fil-A. She's like, can I get a job? She's like, can I get a job in a couple of years? I'm like, well, you know, the legal limit in Tennessee. Sure.
Yeah.
she's already talking about work, talking about saving up for all this and that and everything. And yeah,
that's awesome.
My son is, you know, he's, I don't know, he's like super focused on a lot of stuff, man, but he's like so multifaceted and everything. And then my youngest, he's just, you know, he's living in La La Land. He's still, you know, he's five. So he's just like doing his thing. But
yeah,
like, my daughter is more responsible at 11 years old than most of the kids that I've been in contact with.
Yeah.
Lately, like you're 18, you're not really a kid, but like they can't, they don't do anything for themselves. They, you know, I say, oh, my mom didn't do my laundry. That's why my uniform isn't ready for school. It's like, bro, what?
Yeah.
You really just said that sentence. Your mom didn't do your laundry at 18 years old.
Yeah.
Like, come on, man. My daughter does her own laundry. She's been doing it for the past few years. She can cook herself breakfast, cook, make herself lunch. She helps out with dinner. Like, she is far more capable than most people twice her age. Mm-hmm. That is just, and now I put it on the parents, but at the same time, like, you know, these kids, if there were a thing, like you were saying, mandatory service, if there was just something that made sure everybody got a little bit of push, you know, like to grow up, like,
well, and not to get off subject, but it's, we were talking about it today at work. Some of my coworkers, they don't I'm not sure what it was like when you went to school, but did they have a home ec, like where they kind of taught you how to like,
no,
cook or like, you know, stuff like that. They don't do it anymore. Like I was telling my kids have, they're self-sufficient. They can, they get themselves up. They can dress themselves. Yeah. They can cook, they can clean, they can wash their own damn clothes.
Yeah.
They can even iron. I taught both of my kids how to iron. Yeah. They both know how to like do basic like sewing, like if a button pops off, they can sew the button back on, like basic stuff like that. Yeah. But like a lot of kids don't get that shit. You know what I mean? And it's sad because when they get out into the real world does not give a fuck about you.
No.
The real world is gonna chew you up and spit your ass out.
Yeah.
100 times over. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
And that is, and again, this is just my opinion. This is not
right.
any reflection of anything, you know, whatever. But like, we're doing these kids a disservice. We really are.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, my daughter's chomping at the bit to get a job, dude. She's 15.
Oh, man.
She's 15. And but she's been applying. She's been applying to jobs. It's just nobody calls her back. You know, she's not getting a call back. And I'm like, look, I'm like, if you don't get a call back, like, you need to call them.
Right.
Like, if you really want this job, I mean, this is how it was when I had to do job searching and all that stuff when I was their age. You have to call them and call these places and be like, hey, did you look at my resume? Did you get my job application? You know, whatever. But I know it's going to work out. She'll get a job. Like, let's calm down.
Yeah.
You know, but because she wants to save her money so she can get a cell phone. So okay. I'm like, yeah. So, but anyway, not to digress, but so you served 4 years in the Marine Corps. Why did you get out, or what happened?
So I ended up with grade 3 spondylolisthesis in my spine.
Say what?
It's called spondylolisthesis. And basically my spine, my L4 sits on top of my L5, and it can just like free around and shift all over the place. And that digs into all the nerves, everything, and it, like, a lot of it was, some of it can be, it can be genetic, but just injury sustained while I was in the Marine Corps made it, like, the last PFT that I ever ran, and I was always great, with PFTs. I never had an issue with them, and I, like, barely passed my last one because I could not lift my body up to do crunches, and, it got to the point where I was like, dude, I can't function in this job anymore. Like, I wouldn't even trust myself, like, having to drag somebody somewhere.
Yeah.
or pick somebody up to save them or anything. Like, it got to that point where, like, I would kneel down and I'm like, oh my God, like, I'm having trouble getting back up. And, so getting hurt was just kind of the nail in the coffin. I was like, there's no way I could never wear a bomb suit and walk around as EOD. Like, that is, like, the last thing that I could ever be doing, you know? Mm-hmm. So I was like, I really, like, my heart was in staying in. but it was just one of those things where I was like, I think this is a sign that it's time to move on. And, I miss it. You know, I miss the brotherhood. I miss the camaraderie, and I miss the people. And, the experiences a lot more than I miss, waking up at 4:30 in the morning and going for a 5 mile run.
Right. Missing all the things that make the Marine, you miss the Marine, you miss the Corps, but you don't miss the Marine Corps. You know what I mean? Like, you miss,
right. I miss it.
Right.
No, it's
right.
Like an it right. that you can't explain.
Right. So what was it like for you getting out? Like, was it, was it tough? Were you, was it hard for you when you got out at first?
Yeah. Yeah, man.
Yeah.
And, and I don't know, like, I don't know, you always try and, like, play it off like you have nothing to complain about, or at least I have a problem with doing that, like, of, I don't know what you call it, like, dismissing what I'm feeling, or, trying to explain my way out of my feelings and stuff like that. Or, and,
like, diminishing your feelings.
Yeah. And, yeah. You know, just kind of, like, downplaying what I was going through and stuff. Like, I shouldn't feel like this, 'cause, blah, blah, blah. But, yeah, man, I had a really hard time actually, when I first got out. I started drinking a lot. And I met my wife not too long after I got out. And she was going through a really tough period in her life, and I was having a horrible time adjusting to normalcy, really. I missed
that's the shit.
And I was just like,
that's the shit that they don't teach you about. They don't
own. Like, it was just, I don't know. It was like the loneliest I've ever been in my life.
Yeah.
But it was like, I went back to friends and family, and I went back to New Jersey. It was just like, no matter how many people I surrounded myself with, no matter how much I tried to get out and do stuff and, get, some FaceTime with old friends and everything, like, nothing felt good. Like, it was just the weirdest sensation to be miserable and so alone and low and just like just completely downtrodden. And I'm like, I don't have like, you know, like I said, like I'm thinking to myself, like I didn't go through like these horrible wartime, you know, where I'm like freaking out over fireworks and stuff or anything like that. But it was just like, one, I had no idea what the fuck I was doing. Cause I was like, okay, job. What do I do?
Right.
Like I did landscaping, you know, through my whole, you know, childhood, you know, all the way through high school and everything. And, that was really my only work experience aside from like a very short stint as a dishwasher. But, you know, landscaping, I made plenty of money in high school and, you know, but I was like, that's not like, it wasn't like a real job. Like
I
did like the maintenance side of things for a company and I ran that with my dad and we were doing a whole bunch of stuff. And then I started going out on my own. And then, so it wasn't like, you know, it was a dad's friend that had this thing going. He hired me on and I got out and I'm like, who do I call to start talking about employment and
how do I do this thing they call life?
Yeah. And they're, you know, they say when you go through like SEPs and TAPs and all that, they're like, oh, there's so many resources that you can do and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yes, but also have you ever tried to get in contact with those people? Cause it's
right.
It is a complete, like, I don't know. They just, I feel like they're feeding you a line of bullshit when you get out where they're like, don't worry, you'll be taken care of. And then I got out and I'm like, I have no fucking friends. Like, you know, like my brothers, like I missed everybody.
Yeah.
I was like, this kind of sucks. Like, I was like, I can't believe I was actually looking forward to getting back to this. And, you know, I was just like, I don't know what to do with myself, man.
Yeah.
And, you know, I went through, I was like, I guess I could try and get like unemployment while I'm looking for stuff. So I did that for a short while. And then I ended up moving to Philly and, I was, you know, trying to help out a friend. He ended up being, like not kicked out, but they wouldn't renew his lease in his apartment. And they were doing like a whole bunch of shicey shit. I mean, it's Philly, so, you know, go figure.
Yeah.
He was like, hey man, like, I don't really have a place to stay. What are you up to? And I was like, well, we can get an apartment together. He was like my best friend through high school. And, I was like, dude, if you need a place, like I'm on unemployment, but I was thinking about going to school anyway. I could go to school down in Philly and, you know, whatever. And, so we got a place together and it was good for a while. Like, you know, it gave me a sense of familiarity, like of somebody that I was really close to.
Yeah.
I obviously kept in touch the whole time I was in the Marine Corps and everything. And so I was like, all right, you know, this is going to be good. This will work out great. And it did. Then we started collecting animals in a 2-bedroom apartment in Philadelphia. Then we started breeding snakes in this apartment. And I'm like, it's definitely not going to pay the bills, but it's pretty freaking cool. Like, we had like cages of snakes everywhere. We had birds, lizards, like you name it. And I'm like, dude, if anybody from like maintenance walks in here, we're going to get kicked out of here.
We're so fucked. Fast. So, were you growing pot in the basement too?
No, man, I wish. But like, I'm like, all right, you know, so like this is, it's working, but this isn't success. Like I'm not bettering myself doing this. Like I gotta figure some shit out. And then so my wife and I met was it February 2012, I think.
Oh shit. You better know this shit, dude.
Yeah. So we met it sounds strange when I first explain it, but hear me out. So my brother is married to my wife's half sister.
Okay.
So I had met my wife once before, but she doesn't really remember because she was going through this horrible episode of like an ex-boyfriend cheating on her. And she was like bombed at her family's Christmas party. I met her for like 2 seconds. And then, you know, I was like, man, that girl is miserable. She can find what she's looking for. And then fast forward, like, I don't know what it was, a year or two later. And, So my brother gets married to her half sister. We just call her, you know, her sister. They're so close. You know, we don't say the half thing, but just, you know, for clarity. And so my brother and her sister get married, and my brother asked me to be his best man. And she was the maid of honor. And I was like, all right. So we met that night, instantly hit it off. Like, I was like, this is really, you're really cool. I like you a lot. Like, I don't know where this is going to go, but
Where the fuck have you been all my life?
yeah. So, one fact, I actually had like everything set to go down to Dallas at this point, to be Dallas PD. So
Oh,
I was like, all right, that was the game plan. I had talked to the, I don't know, some guy came up and was like recruiting and stuff. And I was like, here's my military experience. That's really all I got going for me. What's up? He was like, you'd be great. Sure. Absolutely. I'm like, all right, cool. So my dad ended up knowing somebody down there some way, somehow. And I had it hooked up where I was going to like stay in the police barracks to take all these tests and do all like the entrance exams, everything. He's like, so I had like plane ticket, plan of action, packing my bags. Like, I am out the door. I think it was supposed to be like February, I remember, 21st or 22nd or something, and I met her on the 18th. And then I had to turn around and explain to my dad, who was like, you know, pulling some strings, hooking all this up for me. I was like, not going to Dallas. He's like, fuck do you mean you're not going to Dallas? He's like, you're shoot in, basically. You're like, you're golden, go. I'm like, I got this really weird feeling, and I've never been like a, you know, hopeless romantic type, but I'm like, I can feel like this is love at first sight. Like, this girl's awesome, man.
That's
And
awesome.
I mean, here we are, 12 years, or well, you know, 13 years of dating and stuff. But you know, so much time has flown by, and I'm like, damn, I made the right decision. But you know, that was you know, we did the unorthodox thing. She ended up getting pregnant when I was living in Philly. And so I was like, I gotta move back to Jersey, man. Sorry, you know, I told my roommate. And it triggered like this massive falling out. He was like, fuck you, dude. You know, you're abandoning me. You know, I'm like, dude, I'm gonna have a kid.
And we're both adults.
Yeah, like I'm trying to be do the right thing here. Like, I will definitely be there. So I'm gonna move him back. And I've like had this whole agreement. I'm like, dude, I'll pay half of your rent until you find a roommate. Like, I don't have a problem with it because I know I'm leaving you, you know, in a situation, but I'm willing to help you out. And so I did. I paid the half the rent for literally the rest of his lease, not knowing that he already had a girl move in and she wasn't paying shit. So I'm like, dude, I paid half your lease for no reason whatsoever. And I was happy to do it as a friend, but I don't know, man. He just like cut all ties. He was like, I'll come to your fucking wedding and fuck it up and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, that's a bad idea because there's a lot of people there that you wouldn't get past. But I don't know, man. It was just like, so that was a big thing. Like, you know, being, I don't know, maybe a year out or so at this point. And I'm like, dude, the one guy that I had, you know, some like the familiarity, the closeness and everything like gone. And I'm like, you know, I'm just about to have a kid. Like, we talked about it in length, my wife and I, before my daughter was born. We were like, you know, we don't have to get married, right? Like, we were both cool with not doing it. Or if the other didn't want to, like, I was honest with her. I was like, if you don't want to, like, I am totally cool with it. I am here. Like, I'm not going anywhere. Child aside, like, you are, like, I'm absolutely staying here for you, like, as well. Like, you know, that was not even a question. And she was like, you know, she was like, I'm absolutely in love with you. Like, I see no reason not to get married. I'm like, me either. Cool. Let's do it. So, you know, we got married. She was like 38 weeks pregnant. And then like 2 weeks later, my daughter was born. And at this point I had gotten a job as a security guard for like a children's hospital. It was like a place for kids with disabilities and stuff.
Okay.
So I was doing security there for a little bit, and then I was like, kind of gotta make a little bit more money. So I went to FedEx. I drove there for a year, and then my mother-in-law's friend got in touch with her, and she was like, "Hey, the company I work for is hiring. Does your son-in-law want a job?" And she was like, "I'll ask him." Then I heard about it, saw the details of pay and everything. I was like, "This place got insurance? Phew, yes, sign me up."
Yeah.
And there I stayed for almost a decade, man.
That was the R&D, the chemical place or
Yeah.
whatever.
So I worked in it was semiconductors, so all the chemicals that go into like computer chips and everything.
Yeah.
And
Wow.
so I worked in what's called process development. So we were basically like the second half of R&D, where I would take we would actually invent molecules at that company, and I would take them, do them on really small scale experiments. I would have to design it. I would build it myself. I would operate it, improve it wherever we had, like kind of perfect it. If it was viable, I would scale it up to like a pilot level. And then if that was viable and they were like, "Yes, this is going really well, let's scale it up to like high volume manufacturing," and then
Yeah.
scale it to that level, design that, build it, run it, perfect it, and then start training a whole bunch of production operators on it. And it was wild doing this with zero experience, no degree. Like, I was like, "I don't know, this should just make sense to me." Like, it's, chemical here, chemical there, filter this, synthesize that. And it was just all learning on the job. I had awesome engineers to work with, though. Like, they were top-notch people, and my boss was like
Yeah.
second to none, dude. Like, shout out to that guy.
Yeah.
He would include the techs in, like, we obviously couldn't say like, "Yes, hire him," but he would have us meet engineers that they would interview for, like, coming to our group. And he'd be like, "So what do you guys think? Personality wise, are they a good fit for the group?" Like, that's what he cared about, was having a good, like, cohesive unit to work
Yeah.
well
Yeah.
together. And that's why our group in the company, we were rock stars, man. We were like, by every metric, the process development group, we were number one. And it was a really cool experience. There was a lot of downsides to that. That's the reason I got out of it. Almost getting between almost getting blown up, almost caught fire a bunch, and poisoned to death a whole bunch. It was just like the stuff that I was, man, I would rather walk through like a, I don't know, I'd rather play with C4 with lit matches and a hammer than I would. Man, it was really dangerous stuff. But it got to me after so long, and I was like, we had been looking to get out of New Jersey for a long time, and I
Yeah.
was like, an opportunity presented itself here in Tennessee. I said, "It, babe, it's now or never." And she was like, "It's time. We need to get the fuck out of here." So we did.
Nice.
Love it, man. We couldn't be happier down here. Like, the whole thing just worked out really, really well.
That's awesome, dude. So how's life now?
So now, I just started this new job. Was it last week on the 19th?
Working for
I'm
Ford.
liking it so far. Yeah. So
Nice.
I got out of school, forget, like, beginning of February. And then took a couple days off. We went down to Florida for my daughter had her gymnastics competition down there. I was
Very
like,
nice.
got a little, 5 day vacay in before I, got out back to the real world, as I like to call it. But yeah, man, the kids are happy and healthy. They love living down here. My wife's very happy with where we're at, and she's been at the same job for, I don't know, man, like 12 years or something. It's been a
Nice.
while, and she does really well there. So she's been just completely supporting us and me through, going through school, and not ha I mean, you have like the housing allowance and stuff, and I have like VA disability, but she is absolutely our financier. And now that I'm working, it's great, because I'm like, finally, I feel like I'm like contributing again. But we were both so comfortable with, I was like, "Look, I made pretty good money working at Air Liquide for a long time, and she was making good money by the time we were ready to move." So I was like, we can do this. Like, you know, we can, you know, it's gonna be harder. We're gonna have to be a little more stringent and cut back on some stuff. But, you know, it's definitely a sigh of relief having a job. But as far as
Especially
living out,
now.
and you know, things are unbelievably expensive now. Like, it blows my mind, dude. In the past, like 10 years, how things have just almost just gotten completely out of control. But you know, our house price and property and everything down here was, it's not the cheapest in Tennessee, I'll tell you that, but it's way cheaper than New Jersey was, like, you know, for certain.
Oh, I can only imagine.
You know, our money goes further. It's just a lot more comfortable. There's more outdoor stuff to do, and you know, my kids are homeschooled, so we have like a lot of time to, you know, really focus on them and do what we want with them. And they go out with us all the time. You know, they go everywhere with my wife and I. And you know, there's always like that. I don't know. Maybe not so much nowadays. I'm not sure because I don't run into it a whole lot. But there was always that like stigma when I was a kid. It was like, oh, the weird homeschool kid that's like a, you know, slimy dude in a closet. Kids are like super well adjusted. Like, you know, everywhere we go, people are always like, oh, they're so polite. And I'm like, yeah. Kids are supposed to be polite. Like, if I wasn't polite as a kid, I was definitely gonna know it, you know? And it's like, I don't know, I just try and teach them to be good people and do the right thing. Like, it's not, I don't think
not,
rocket science,
it's not that hard.
but it just seems like it's just really hard for some people to grasp now. Like, all right, but you know, it's great, man. Like, we have way more freedom here to do a lot of stuff that we like to do. And last year we ended up buying a travel trailer, like a, you know, camper, like tow behind campers and stuff, and you know, taking trips in that. So, you know, they're getting to see a lot more of Tennessee and like this part of the country, and what, you know, a little more settled in the job and everything. Like, we have, you know, we want to take it longer trips and go across the country and get them to see the things that I never got to see as a kid. You know, that's the goal, right? It should be to give them more than, you know, than
Been what you had.
and but at the same time, keeping them humble and grateful, and you know, like, they are not spoiled by any stretch of the imagination, but you know, they have what I want them to have, and they're happy with it. And if they're happy, I'm happy. You know, life is easy that way.
That's awesome, dude. Yeah, I'm happy for you guys. I'm happy to see people, you know, especially guys that I served with that are like thriving and doing well and you know, just doing what they're, you know, what they're meant to do.
Appreciate
So,
it, man.
of course, man. Of course. Anything else you want to share before we wrap this up or
I think we covered some pretty good stuff, man. Like, you know, I hate that it, you know, it's so hard. Like, I don't have like I mean, I don't have Facebook, so it's harder to look people up and stuff. But I'm definitely glad I got your number now, man. And you know, like I said, and if you're ever in the Tennessee area, man, like, feel free. Like, the door is open, you know.
Thanks, dude. Yeah, I appreciate that. I've been to Tennessee a couple times because I grew up in Florida, so I've been all over like Georgia, Tennessee, North, South Carolina, obviously, you know. But yeah, like, and same to you. Like, anytime you guys, if you're ever up this way in Buffalo, you got my number. Shoot me a, you know, text me, whatever, you know. But
Sure, man.
you know, again, I can't thank you enough for, you know, again, taking the time out of your day to sit down with me and share your story. And, you know, sometime in the near future, after maybe a couple months or something like that, I'd like to have you back on and do like a, you know, like a second interview with you.
Sure, yeah. Be happy to.
All right, cool beans, man. All right, well, everyone, thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. This is Cole Johnson with Mojo with Kojo, and we'll catch you on the flip side.